It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we begin a Thursday, we want to make this promise to our billions of listeners. There will be 0% hyperbole on this program.
Which means 8.5% hyperbole on the show. All right, let's
maybe higher.
All right, we'll start out with that audio cut. I've got it right here, right
sure.
in front of me. And
all right.
You didn't know that, but I did.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I didn't know how you were going to start.
Yeah.
And here it is.
Actually, I just want to say a number. Zero. Today, we received news that our economy had 0% inflation.
Yeah, sure. 0% inflation.
I mean, that's a complete lie, and everybody knows that. I mean,
my gosh. Well, it was all over because, you know, every alert, if you're following along, if you're, you know, if you've, you're paying attention to inflation, you know, outside of what, you know, consumers pay attention to, which is, of course, their checkbook. If you're following the numbers and the reports, and that's of importance to you, then you already knew the 8.5% number.
Right.
And by the way, it's not, that's not worth bragging on either. Had he said, look, it wasn't as high as most expected, you still can't, that still, in my opinion, wouldn't have been a great thing to promote. Just go on and promote the PACT Act, sign it, the whole thing, do what you're going to do in that room, and don't mention inflation. If I were Biden, I wouldn't mention inflation ever again. Go back to remember the Pete Ducey question? Do you think inflation is going to affect the midterms? And then, you know, what did he call him, a jerk or something, whatever it was? And go back to ignoring it and pretending like it. Go back to saying transitory. Don't mention the word at all.
Because he was immediately mocked.
Oh my gosh, it was horrible.
It was really bad because as we know, and we expected that the 9.1% would come down because of the decrease in gasoline prices. But when you look at core inflation, which is the inflation outside of gasoline and food, that was up 5.7%. You know, for the year, food I think was up 13.1%.
Yeah.
I saw that. I think it was at CNBC here. I didn't know you were going to start on this one, so I'm and so I got so many things here in front of me. Because we've got so many things to talk about today, but I had the numbers here. Here it is. Yeah, core inflation rose 5.9% annually and 0.3% monthly, compared to respective estimates of 6.1% and 0.5%. Prices that consumers pay for a variety of goods and services rose 8.5% in July from a year ago. On a monthly basis, prices were flat as energy prices broadly declined, of course, 4.6%, and gasoline fell 7.7%. That offset a monthly gain for food prices of 1.1%, which is how you get to that 13% number for food over the period of a year. And shelter costs went up 0.5%.
You know, we talked about it the other day. We mentioned a number of items when you go grocery shopping right now, and for a number of reasons. But inflation, it really falls under the same umbrella of inflation. So whether you're talking about any kind of shortage that pertains to a drought that causes prices to spike, on top of inflation, by the way, this is important, is that I see the mainstream financial media breaking it down, going, well, it's because There is a shortage of this, or the supply chain this, or there is a drought and it affects food, this kind of food, or a food made with these items. That's on top of inflation. And, you know, you break it down, and the cost of a number of things is far above that inflation rate.
And, well, as they write here, when they look at the indexes, the jump in the food index was the fastest pace since May of 1979. Mm. So people are still getting killed look, the only thing that changed this really was gasoline. You look at it here. It's the food index, fastest pace since May of 1979. Butter up 26.4%. Eggs have surged 38%. Coffee up more than 20%. Now, the energy index dropped because of the drop in gasoline prices, but electricity prices were up 1.6%. They were up 15.2% from a year ago, but the electricity price is up 1.6% over, you know, you extrapolate that over 12 months, and that's an 18% increase. That's the rate of increase, which is more than what we have seen over the last year, the average of the last year with electricity prices. And just so you know, we have talked about before that companies will move and close down because of electricity prices. That's why it's imperative to keep them low. It happened yesterday. The second biggest aluminum mill in the United States closing down because of untenable energy prices.
We talked about this for many years about, you know, when you look at manufacturing, that the basis cost of it, energy, it is important, because we talked over the years about, okay, how do you attract companies to come back here? Well, first of all, they need to know that there's the manpower if they're going to manufacture in the U.S., that they have people who are either trainable or already have the skills and experience that could lead to a very productive site. And then the next question is, okay, how cheap is the energy? And we haven't had the most sane policy when it comes to energy, but it was a lot better, until recent years. And really, the Obama years really catapulted us into this policy that has a lot of the world scratching their heads, saying, you guys have all of this in the ground and you refuse to go after it. And now, going after and taxing natural gas and everything else, which, by the way, when it comes to carbon emissions, and by their own standard, it's the reason that the U.S. leads the world is natural gas, but they're going to tax natural gas. Let's go after that and shut it down. And it's, you know, this is what happens. So when you have energy prices surging because the government is basically ushering in a forced, it's not even a demand, but in a forced way, ushering in wind and solar, which is not sustainable in that you can rely on it. It's not reliable. It's going to be costly. And this is what happens when you have this kind of long-term policy that skyrockets energy prices. Thank you, President Obama. Then you're going to have it. You're going to make it tougher and tougher for manufacturers. And that's a fact. There's no way around that.
And some of the other things that came down in price showed, again, it's like gasoline prices coming down. The reason the gasoline prices came down was because demand was 10% lower than the summer of 2021, mm-hmm. and a little bit lower than the summer of 2020 when we shut everything down.
Right.
And so there's no demand.
Right.
And why aren't people driving? Why aren't they using gasoline? Because the rest of inflation is killing them. And so naturally you saw, and it was very slight for apparel prices, were down 0.1%. You had used vehicle prices down 0.4% on a monthly decline. But remember, they had skyrocketed through the roof. But you're going to see, as interest rates go up and then demand goes down because of other inflation, you're going to see some of the prices come down because we're in a recession.
Right.
And so that is the logical thing. It doesn't, you should go, well, that's a good thing. Well, yeah, economics shows that's going to happen, but one good thing or one bad thing's being replaced by an, or one bad thing may become a little bit better because another bad thing is starting to sprout up.
Right.
And that doesn't make a good economy. You had transportation services that were down 0.5%, and that's because airline fares fell 1.8% for the, you know, for the month, which, because most of the people now probably in the summertime are making flights for when?
The fall and winter.
The fall and winter.
Holiday, when, you know, likely a lot of them are holiday flights.
Right, but a lot, but if you're making it, there's less demand in September and October, and so flight prices naturally come down. But I look at them, and I've been looking for the most part at the holidays, and they're through the roof.
I just booked for about a month from now, and it was not down. It was actually up $50.
Yeah, and I've already looked at Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they're up significantly. If right now, if I they're not as much as last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Christmas isn't yet, but Christmas wasn't last year up as much as it was. But Thanksgiving is more than it was last year. Right at this moment, you're talking 600, 700, 8. Now, some of the flights you can get might be $600, but you know those flights where you have to go to three different airports.
Mm. Yeah,
and you get there 36 hours later is not what most people are looking for. Or maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but in some of it's like, okay, well, the 600, let me look at that $630 flight. Oh, okay, that leaves at 5 a.m. in the morning, gets to, you know, gets to the hub at 6:30, and then you take off at 6:30 at night after a 12-hour stay.
Well, I like the ones that we can. You take off at 2 p.m. and arrive to your destination the next morning at 9 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, those.
No.
I'm not going to do that one, but $700, $800, some $900 for Thanksgiving right now. So, you know, that may be temporary, or it may come down because, you know, demand for airline seats. And I'll say this, I'm flying Labor Day weekend, and a ton of the seats aren't filled.
Yeah, I'm flying the same weekend, and on my flight, there's probably fewer than a half dozen now.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, there's a lot more for mine, the seats that are available.
Yeah.
Probably.
And it's going to, you know, depend obviously on the destination.
Yeah. But. Out of a plane of, but this is, I checked 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, this is an estimate because I always look, I'll actually count the seats at times, but of a plane that probably holds about 130, I would say 80 of the seats are empty.
Wow.
Right now.
Holy cow. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll check. I'll count.
Wow.
I'll count again.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. 50 to 80.
Yeah.
I'll make the count. I'll actually go and I count the seats at times. And mm-hmm. Because what I was looking at was my ability to be able to get upgraded to first class for free.
That's all that
and
matters.
So I count the number of seats. Okay. If there's still like 50, 60 seats left, okay, you still may have some high rollers that get in there that have, you know, more status than I do that then automatically get upgraded. They changed the system now.
Mm.
If you're a premium flyer, everybody is put on the list to get first class. Mm. You used to have to use your points to do it. And so I hardly get upgraded. I've been upgraded once this year.
Mm.
That's it. Because and I'm platinum.
Mm-hmm.
And still platinum is way down the list.
Yeah.
And there's the people that are super platinum, ultra platinum, mega platinum. I mean, those people are getting...
Yeah, ultra mega platinum.
Ultra mega platinum is...
Well, you might be taken off the plane by the DOJ, but you're going to be in first class before you get taken off the plane. That's the good news.
And they really go through your luggage.
Oh, you want to? They take your luggage.
Exactly.
And your cell phone.
Right. And you can't even read what's on the warrant because they hold it 10 feet away from you until you eventually get it.
Right.
And then you look and say, what's the probable cause? Oh, well, sorry, we have deleted what the probable cause, because the probable cause, you saw that.
Yeah.
From the Newsweek article that the lawyer said, well, they first wouldn't give them the warrant, then showed it to her from like 10 feet away where she could, and then they eventually gave it to her. But the probable cause is blanked out.
Yeah, right. And they're claiming, well, because it's classified. Well, and they spelled warrant Warrent. I thought that was weird. And it was handwritten. The whole thing was handwritten.
there's where we are in inflation. But the president to come out and say 0% inflation.
And the way he did it, I just want to say a number. Zero. 0%. Last month, we had 0% inflation.
I got busy yesterday afternoon. I didn't even see. I just thought about it now.
I saw it when it happened.
I saw that. But did Jean-Pierre hold a press conference, and did Ducey ask about it? Did anybody ask about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't miss that part.
I just thought about that right now. It's...
Yeah. No, that's... I didn't see it. We got to go review that.
Yeah, we got a great show
because
ahead.
Because that's going to be some other... great audio, as it always is.
Oh, man, just amazing. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Keep your engine humming in the heat this summer by keeping up with preventive maintenance. Think your PM is complete after your oil is changed? Think again. There's grease, transmission fluids, and gear oil to consider, too. Grease, for example, is made of oil, thickener, and additives. It provides rust protection by preventing water spray-off and wash-off on equipment like the universal joint, fifth wheel, and clutch throwout bearings. It also helps protect major greasing points like tie rod ends, spring pin bushings, kingpin, and the chassis. Today's synthetic oils means more miles between engine oil changes, but greasing intervals aren't growing at the same pace. Your fifth wheel, for example, needs to be greased every 15,000 miles or monthly. Stop into a TA truck service near you to start or strengthen your preventive maintenance program today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Eric Harley here for a new sponsor, Total Tax Inc. Total Tax knows how challenging it can be to run your own business. Whether it's just you and your rig on the open road or if you operate a fleet, Total Tax can help. They've been helping small business owners like you across the USA since 1991 with an experienced and licensed team of financial and tax experts to help keep your business on track and successful. Whether you need help filing back tax returns, resolving taxes you owe, or staying on top of your bookkeeping and current tax returns, think of Total Tax as your business partner providing you with peace of mind while you're on the road. Total Tax is a family-owned business that understands our independent tradesmen are the backbone of America, and they look forward to serving your financial and tax needs so you can keep our country running strong by providing consistent, personal, dedicated, effective, and ethical service to their clients. Total Tax has sustained an A+ BBB rating for over 3 decades. Go to TotalTaxForTruckers.com or call 855-920-4121 today and get a free consultation. That's TotalTaxForTruckers.com. TotalTaxForTruckers.com.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Kevin from Newsbusters just sent you a message and said there was no press conference.
Yeah, Kevin Tober over at Newsbusters sent me a private message, said there was no press conference, so Steve Ducey did not get to ask Jean-Pierre about why.
I would have seen that somewhere. Someone would have. Well, Newsbusters would have posted it.
I was going to say, shame on us because we would have seen it through Newsbusters because they do all the heavy lifting.
I'm sorry, but there were just so many stories. All I was doing was scanning everything yesterday, because there's a ton of stuff coming up. By the way, as I told you right before we came in, I go, I'm starting to feel a little uncomfortable that Newsbusters is listening to the show all the time.
They're going to fact check us.
They're going to make you fact check here very soon.
The dolts at Red Eye Radio say.
they are the two idiots overnight.
And Twitter is mocking us.
Coming up, the latest on the raid on Trump's house, just to show you that we were right in analyzing inflation, Larry Summers, the Obama economist, didn't say it the way we said it, but the message is the exact same of what we said.
Yeah, right.
This wasn't zero inflation.
Zero.
And be very wary about the numbers that brought it down. And he was specific, just like we were, the airline prices, car prices, because they're extremely volatile. and very hard to predict where they're going to go.
Right.
And he said, he goes, it's sort of like March, where everybody said, oh, okay, it's over in March, and all of a sudden, boom, we get hit. So he didn't seem too optimistic on it. So we'll get to that. Democrats' attempt to increase electric vehicle sales will do the opposite.
Oh, man. Even NBC and their financial media arm, CNBC, was on this story. That's not good.
Gary McNamara and Eric Harley taking your calls. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning and everything else. And I'm sorry, my mind today is just, I took too much in.
Yeah.
There was just so much going on. Yeah. I mean, just. And we'll get to this here in just a little bit. I mean, the Trump raid itself, you know, with the Newsweek article and then the analysis of it and everything else. Mm. It's just like, and then all the inflation numbers and the spin and all that. And plus, also coming up, want to make sure we get everything that's coming up on the show tonight. Ending the pandemic unemployment aid spurred substantial rise in employment. That came from the Fed yesterday. Mainstream media on the coverage of the killing of the four Muslim men. The murdering of the four Muslim men in Albuquerque and how they jumped the gun on that one. Great timing. If there was ever, this was the best, worst timing ever.
Yeah.
The IRS deleting the job posting seeking applicants who will use deadly force.
Yeah, willing to carry a weapon and use deadly force.
And the only thing I could think of was, because this is the Biden administration. The Biden administration that was for, and we know the left, defunding, and remember, police shouldn't have firearms.
Right.
And so what did they come out with in their bill? I'm just like, that's why they had to delete it. They, somebody realized, wait a minute, we can't talk about armed IRS agents. The GOP is killing us on this by telling the people, hey, they're going after gig workers and they're going after people that are working off the books. Well, those aren't the rich.
Right.
The rich aren't doing that.
No.
And so they also come up with an ad. We're looking for agents. Must be willing to use deadly force to get that Uber driver who is not following all the deduction rules.
Yeah. So how long you been babysitting?
Since my 13th birthday 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And is it true your parents got you a piggy bank?
Yeah.
Break into that piggy bank.
How much is in there? How much is buried in the vault underneath your floor?
Do you have a piggy bank safe?
Yeah.
Right. We have a warrant right here.
Yeah.
What's the probable cause? It's top secret.
It's top secret. We can't tell you.
So then, my God. These people, it's like there's no awareness.
Well,
no sense of awareness.
No, and I'm telling you, I really believe now there was a parallel virus with the COVID thing. I said it back then. I've been saying it on and off for, you know, a few years, couple of years now. But I really believe that now more and more that theory is sound, because it is just stupidity. I mean, you just absolutely have to be brainless. Because here's the thing. The reason I say that it's a parallel virus is because they all have it. Not one person in that chain of events said, hey, maybe we don't put this out there. Maybe it's me, but this looks kind of, I don't know, dark Biden. I don't think we should be Dark Brandon. I don't think we need to go all Dark Brandon on this ad here. I think maybe we just tone it down. Hey, if you're good with numbers, we're looking for a few good agents. And by a few, we mean 87,000.
and you must be willing to use deadly force to go after those gig workers.
Right. Holy cow.
I mean, you couldn't have, the timing couldn't have been worse, and they knew it because they deleted it.
Yeah, right.
Another FBI whistleblower came forward about the FBI pressuring agents to boost case numbers for domestic violent extremism. That's the one interesting thing that we're seeing now, FBI whistleblowers that are coming forward. And we had asked for the longest time on certain things like, you know, Russia collusion and all that. Now, one of the problems was with Russia collusion, and because we've always said this, that there are a hell of a lot of great FBI agents,
yeah,
and a lot of great CIA operatives out there,
yeah.
And one thing we can't do is broad brush when management becomes political,
right.
And I'm sure there are agents that are caught between a rock and a hard place. They know they're doing good, but it's like, I'll be gone if I we do. We've all worked for organizations like that. But in Russia collusion, was it just, did that ever get down to example to a ton of field agents, or was that something that was kept, as we have said, that because the top management of the FBI has become political, it's without question,
right.
And the Department of Justice. I mean, there are politicians in there, but, you know, that, so obviously you'd get politics in it, but it's the partisan politics that you see in it to do things that are immoral, that should get you fired, that in some cases should get you, Klein Smith and others, arrested,
yeah, right,
and charged. But one thing we don't want to do ever on this show is broad brush the average CIA operative or the average FBI agent that I believe just wants to do their job. They don't go into...
Well, they do. They want to do a good right. job because they believe in the mission. The training, I know, because I've been told directly, that the training, I had a family member that went from NYPD to FBI, and... You would think, well, it's similar in your, you know, dealing with a bunch of, wow, you know, massive cases that are unique to those enforcement agencies. And that part is true, except when you go in as a young person and you're training, and this was the experience of that person, my family member, you're learning things at the FBI about, you know, basically how evil the world can be. And you already knew that as a police officer. But you certainly going in, you're learning a number of other things. And so you're taught to see, to look for, and you're, by the way, you're hired because they believe your mind works this way, to see things that aren't right. And I think it's a good thing that these whistleblowers are coming forward, because that's the only way, James Comey, you're going to actually protect the integrity of the FBI and those agents that are out there doing the job for the right reason. You get to the upper echelon and you know, a director like a James Comey, you can make the case for Ray and I don't know, a number of directors over the years, Mueller, and you can say, okay, these are politicians. These are people that are appointed. These are people that, you know, that aren't and don't talk in many cases like investigators, like police officers, and we talked that about that during the whole thing with you know, the fallout after Comey being fired and testifying and everything else. We said he talks weird, he doesn't talk like an investigator, because they have their own language. You just have to be around them enough, and it, you know, doesn't even watch some episodes of Cops, and you'll hear, you know, they talk specifically, they talk like investigators and police officers. And
they're inquisitive about what the crime is and going after the crime. They have an investigator's mindset.
Yep.
And this isn't what you see. You see in the top. And by the way, that has to be frustrating. It has to be frustrating. It would be for me if I'm an FBI agent and my job, you know, it's like, okay, once I become an FBI agent, I got to throw politics out the window. I'm looking at, what is the statute? What is, does the evidence exist that this person did something.
Well, look but, at the, yeah, look at the assessment thing. When the two agents that were on that case said, you know, the person that wrote this white paper, this looks 51-50-ish, you know, kind of crazy. This doesn't make any sense at all. And they alerted their supervisors, and they were told no. And obviously at that point, their management, their supervisors, and people above them were already moving this in a direction that had nothing really to do with an investigation. They were just going to move with this regardless. But
their investigative mindset was correct.
Yes, they saw it. It was a big red flag for them. And anyone who is true to the mission at the FBI, the CIA, any local law enforcement agency, if you're true to the job, then that's never going to change. That's the person you are, which is what makes you good for that job. That makes you the person to be in that position. And whistleblowers will always be a huge part of that. That's always going to be the case. And hopefully we're going to learn more, and hopefully there is a, you know, something to be learned, but I don't know that there is for people like Strzok, Comey, quite possibly Wray, that we could throw in. I mean, there's so many things we haven't learned about the current FBI director, about how this thing goes down in Mar-a-Lago. How in the world does that happen? How in the world do you do a raid on a former president? You don't contact the governor of that state. You contact the Secret Service right before it happens. The Secret Service on that detail. You contact the local FBI office right before it happens. Tell me how that is not politically driven.
Well,
all for what?
Well, when I read the Newsweek story that talked about that the one of the sources was a, you know, the senior veteran of 30 years of the FBI, and the explanation was they did this and they didn't want Trump to be there because they didn't think if Trump wasn't there, then he wouldn't be able to make a story out of it because the cameras would have been on Trump doing it, and they would be able to avoid exactly what happened.
Uh-huh.
That's bull.
Right. That's exactly.
If you've been an FBI, that means 30 years. That means you're talking going all the way back to 1992. You've been with the FBI.
Yeah.
You've been with the FBI for 30 years, and you're trying to convince the public as a source. That's why I think it's BS.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you didn't know that if you raided Trump, Mar-a-Lago, his home, and went in and did it with no explanation coming from the Department of Justice or the FBI, that it would basically be a non-story or something that would just be a blip? Yeah. And now you're even admitting, well, the opposite sort of happened. I don't buy it.
No, I don't buy it. Don't buy that at all.
And we'll get to that. I was going to play Larry Summers, but there's just so many topics out there. We'll get to Larry coming up, the Obama economist on inflation coming up, plus all those other stories.
Yeah.
This is one of those days where it's almost as if my mind has reached capacity.
So well, it's like there's so many stories.
There really is.
I'll tell you this. There's 0% fat in this show. 0%.
A lot of carbohydrates, but yeah. No fat.
No fat. I'm telling you. You know what it feels like? I've never been to – no, actually, I did go to one time, one of those restaurants that comes out, and they carve off the meat at your table.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a business trip one time, and they took us there, but I didn't eat much because, you know, you don't want to pig out in front of, you know, people you're doing business with. But, I mean, it feels like one of those things where the liberals are handing us so much, I'm getting the meat sweats. I mean, they're just coming back to the table, carving off huge chunks of goodness onto our platter every single day. And it's really hard to keep up.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. We'll just have some comment on the inflation numbers coming up following the top of the hour. We started off the show because we had to with the president saying the number zero,
yeah,
which of course is a lie.
Yeah.
But if you're going to lie, lie big right now in the administration. But I'll tell you this, you know, his polling numbers have improved over the last couple of weeks. Not a lot, but they've moved in a positive direction. And, you know, so people are wondering, okay, well, wait a minute. Democrats don't buy that the inflation bill worked.
Right.
So we saw that polling came out yesterday, and we did, or 2 days ago, and we did that yesterday on yesterday's show. Polling shows that only 20% of Democrats believe it will reduce inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that. Is it COVID? Was it sympathy for COVID, or was it the fact that he isn't talking at all to the media? He'll make a statement and leave, and they have found out have they done the polling that shows that as soon as he tries to answer a question or does anything ad lib, it fails. And so they have decided to put him, I think in the Drudge Report, there's a headline saying he doesn't answer any questions anymore.
Right.
You know, what's going on with the president? He doesn't. And so they have figured out that, look, it worked when he was in the basement. The best thing that we can do, and by the way, we gave this advice to them, just read a teleprompter for a minute and then walk away.
Right. Go out and do something every day, or at least 4 days a week. Say something in front of a camera. Don't take questions.
No questions. Walk away.
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. And if you can't listen live overnight, because there are people that have listened to us, you know, before we had our podcast, before we podcasted our show, that, you know, would stop working nights and said, wish I could catch the entire show. This goes back years, but now you can. If you can't listen live, you can listen to our podcast.
Yes, you can. Download the app, the app.
And it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Yeah, that way you can keep up.
Right. So when we saw inflation yesterday at 8.5%, and when
you mean zero?
Well, I'm going to say, when I woke up and I heard the president say zero, I'm like, what? Because I'm thinking, well, that's a pretty big lie because I know it's not that. And I saw president says zero. That was the first thing I saw.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it went from 9.1% to zero. That's impossible. And it was impossible.
It didn't happen.
It was 8.5 percent.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the stock market saying, well, it didn't go to 10.
Well, and it beat the median forecast, right, which is 8.7. And so the stock market was like, all right, we'll take it.
Well, it's funny because Larry Summers, former Obama economist, who was the one who told the Biden administration, one of the Obama economists, do not pass at $1.9 trillion bill in March of 2021. That's going to put inflation over the top. And it's exactly what happened. And he said they just wouldn't listen to me. They would not listen to me.
Right.
And still they don't. Still they're spending money as if it doesn't. They want to spend money. They haven't spent the Make Inflation Greater Act here at this at this moment. But he talked about that yesterday, and he said, well, yeah, it's, you know, better than the month before, so yeah, that's positive, but...
All right, here's the audio.
I think it would be a mistake for anyone to radically revise their view of the situation based on these numbers. This report's a lot like the report in March, which was followed by very discouraging reports afterwards, making the optimists from March look wrong several months later. So I'm not saying that that's going to happen again, but I think we just need to maintain a sense of uncertainty and wait for the data as it comes.
And I think, look, one of the things he's looking at is exactly what we looked at to end yesterday's show, in fact, because we wanted to go over those numbers again, and we looked at the numbers that came out last week, and the gasoline numbers, and showing that we use 10% less gasoline this summer, what we had in, you know, to that point, than we did in the summer of 2021, and even a little less than we did in the summer of 2020 when everything was locked down. That was really discouraging when I saw that. That number, I don't know what that did to economists, but to me, and I think probably you, we went, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. I mean, because this was the first. You just look at psychologically where the country is, and this summer was, this is the summer that we want to get out and do things. And we saw the, you know, the increase, the number of people that wanted to fly initially, and the number of people that said, no, we're going to do our plans this year. And all of a sudden, it seemed like inflation hit, and people said, we're not going to drive.
Yeah.
And so that number hit us, as did the, you know, the of course, the 9.1% inflation. And then what were some of the other numbers that came out since then? We had the gasoline numbers.
Yeah, the gasoline inventory numbers, the jobs numbers.
When you broke down the jobs numbers.
Yeah.
When you broke down the jobs numbers and realized that you lost 71,000 full-time jobs.
Yeah.
And that all of the job growth was part-time job, and the majority of those were people who, according to the Labor Department, took those jobs because of inflation.
Right.
And there were significant increase in the number of people that decided to work a part-time job as a second job. That was 92,000 of that, which is quite significant. And again, made you think, all right, this all has to do, you know, with inflation, and people are being forced to do it. And then the productivity numbers that came out just 2 days ago that were in the toilet. I mean, they were just in the worst productivity numbers in the history of taking productivity numbers in the United States. And I think that, and look, we have a media that is just ignorant on everything. They don't know they don't know how the real world works. They don't know engineering. They truly don't know economics. They really don't. And right. And so when you don't, you sit there and you live in the bubble of today. Oh, inflation's down, so everything must be great. Yeah, 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 yeah. And Summers knows. He knows all those other numbers that have come out, and he understands the fear that they're having is the core inflation.
Yep.
And that is outside of food and energy. But I also think that when you look at food and you look at energy, when you look at electricity prices, and he's looking at this, electricity prices up 15.6% over the last year, and in the inflation reading that just came out, up 1.6%. That's 18%, that's on an 18% annualized increase in electricity prices. Now, part of that may be because the electricity demand has gone up during a hot summer, but the fact is electricity overall, not even in the hot summer, has increased 15% over the year to year. He looks at things like that and say, okay, it's a volatile number, but it is electricity, and people are going to use a lot of it come the wintertime too. So you look at that, and then you look at food prices, and you see that food prices are up 13%, and food prices month to month, food prices were up. If you look at the monthly annualized rate, was up 13%. It actually went up from the month before.
Yeah, right.
And so you look at that, and that's outside of core inflation. Then you look at core inflation, which is so broad based, and it went up. It got worse. And of course, he also understands that part of the reduction is because of the interest rates, because we're raising interest rates in order to slow down the economy. So there is going to be some more demand, and inflation can slowly subside. But for the president to come out and call it 0%, gives the impression to the people that, oh, okay, things are going to get better. And the prices are still going to be the same for the things that they need the most, or more expensive for the things that they need the most, which are electricity, food.
Yeah.
And, yeah, used car prices came down, was it point something percent, 0.4%? Mm. But that's because they skyrocketed, what, 48%?
Right.
From the low of last year to where they are now, which is still way too expensive.
To the point that it didn't make sense to buy used.
Yeah, that's my car salesperson told me that. She said, yeah, people are coming. I said, how are you doing? She goes, oh, we got nothing on the lot, and everything is, you know, will be delivered in 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks.
Right, yeah.
And she said, and people come, and they, you know, it's like, I was thinking of buying a used car, but they're so dang expensive, I might as well buy a couple more thousand and get a brand new car.
Right.
That's how bad it was. So, the numbers weren't good. And for the president to come out and say zero, that's the kind of narrative that people will hear and they don't experience it. And there were probably a lot of Democrats that, when the president said that, shook their heads and said, you need to shut up.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing, what got you into the position of where you are, is saying that this is what's really going on and you're just not experiencing it when you experience it every single day. And so, yeah, just figured I'd play Mr. Summers there, because you can't call him a a free market capitalist. He is a Keynesian economist. He is the most liberal type of economist. And when it comes from him, and that's why you'll hear on this show a lot of times, we'll play when liberals have a moment of intellectual honesty, we'll make sure you can hear from them.
Yeah, and you know, that's if you're going to be intellectually honest, then you have to look at it for what's going on and what's happening. You know, part of the trend has been, and it's hard to quantify this, but so it's purely anecdotal observation on my part. But this trend of the financial media looking at things going, well, these prices are jumping because, and they'll throw supply chain issues, right? Or the drought is causing this. And the fact of the matter is, yes, those are dynamics in the pricing. But also the dynamics in the pricing is the higher cost of energy and inflation all along any supply chain. And so to ignore that, because you could start your article or presentation, story, whatever, and say, on top of inflation, here's what's making it worse for this product or making it more expensive to get this product to the shelves. That's fair. And I think complete. But they're not, in too many cases that I've observed, they're not doing that. They're not including the fact that, all right, you're not adding the base inflation cost to it in that story.
Exactly.
You have to include all the above, because understanding that, you know, I don't know where the breaking point is. You know, we can see it with gasoline. We've talked about this. We go back to 2008, oil at $147 a barrel, and gas prices then reaching, for that time, the highest ever. And we said, okay, there's going to be a threshold where people will stop driving as much. And we saw it then, and we're seeing it now. In fact, the inventory report on gasoline was that indicator that shows, my gosh, we've slowed down to the rate of, you know, that drop in demand is like what was going on in the first couple of months of COVID. And that should tell you something. Well, that threshold with gasoline, people can change their driving habits. With food, you can change your eating habits to a certain extent, but you've got still have to have the basics. You've got to have food. And when you're hitting that, there is no, you can say, well, all right, they'll change to a store brand instead of a name brand product, whatever it is. I've actually done that on a couple of items. There are things, that where you can say, okay, the habits are changing, but nonetheless, they can't say, I'm just going to not eat. I'm just going to not feed my family. Oh, I saw this too. Inflation-related debt in Europe, skyrocketing. And a lot of it has to do with their energy bills. And their debt is skyrocketing. You know, this is the thing that you have to look at, too. And I would love to see any kind of report that sees, that shows the rate of the increase of the use of credit for everyday things like groceries, like gasoline. And are those credit lines, the outstanding balances, are they growing? I'd love to know.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on drug and alcohol testing. Post-accident drug and alcohol testing is required after certain accidents that occur in a CMV requiring a CDL. If there is a fatality, the CMV driver must be tested for drugs and alcohol. Testing also occurs if the CMV driver is issued a citation and one or more vehicles must be towed from the scene due to disabling damage, or if the CMV driver is issued a citation and any of the involved parties requires immediate medical treatment away from the scene. There are time limits to post-accident testing, however. Alcohol testing can only be conducted for up to 8 hours after the accident, and drug testing can only be conducted for up to 32 hours. The CDL driver must remain available for testing during the 32 hours after the accident and is prohibited from drinking alcohol for 8 hours or until after the driver has taken an alcohol test. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by Pilot Flying J and by Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. And what a zoo it was yesterday with the whole FBI raid on the president's house and the Newsweek article. And it was funny because I was just reading here. The first time today I was able to read Jonathan Turley, and he says exactly what we had said. The thing that really caught me on the Newsweek article. It said, what is bizarre is that Newsweek says the agents thought that they could lower the profile of the raid since Trump was not present. That borders on the delusional, if true. Carrying out the first raid on the home of a former president is guaranteed to be high profile. Mm-hmm. You know, it's low profile, a subpoena.
Yeah. You know, and here's the thing, because if you're looking at it going, well, if we send a subpoena, then Trump's just going to be all over, Truth Social or in the media talking about how they're, how we sent him a subpoena and blah, 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 blah. Well, the fact of the matter is that there's no way around this. It's going to make big news one way or the other. A subpoena would be much lower profile. Well, it's part of the continuing effort to negotiate these documents with the former president, which tells you what. This wasn't about the Presidential Records Act. This is a fishing expedition.
And the other thing, and Turley doesn't mention this, but the one thing in the Newsweek article that got to me, where he said, and this is straight from the Newsweek article, FBI decision makers in Washington and Miami thought that denying the former president a photo opportunity or a platform from which to grandstand or to attempt to thwart the raid would lower the profile of the event, says one of the sources, a senior Justice Department official who is a 30-year veteran of the FBI. There's no way a 30-year veteran of the FBI would believe that there would be a low profile to, for the first time ever, raiding a former president's home. That doesn't, sorry, that doesn't pass the stink test. Turley didn't put that in. We had said that last hour.
Yep.
But Turley didn't put that in there. That's the thing where I went, that's bull.
Yep.
There's no way that a 30-year veteran of the FBI, there's no way that a senior Justice Department official thought, oh, okay, well, we can raid a president's home for the, and if Trump isn't there and we go into Mar-a-Lago for 10 hours and go through their home, Melania's wardrobe, you saw that one,
mm-hmm.
right? That, oh, it'll stay low profile.
Yeah, right.
Oh, we're surprised that that didn't happen. The effort to keep the raid low-key failed. Instead, it prompted a furious response from GOP leaders and Trump supporters. What a spectacular backfire, says the justice official.
This was always going to be a backfire.
I mean,
you're just raiding the home of a former United States president. That's a boomerang that won't quit.
I don't buy the Newsweek story because of that.
Exactly.
Everything is suspicious in that story.
Of course.
Yep.
Even ask about the extra E. Call in during the show. 1-866-90-RED-EYE. Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE.
During the months of August and September, we are taking time out to recognize some of America's truck drivers. Thank you for being out there, drivers. You are the backbone of the economy, and we greatly appreciate you as listeners, but more importantly, as the backbone of the economy. And delivering during good times and bad, we know that things aren't great right now when it comes to freight rates and to when it comes to fuel costs and everything else. But we certainly, you have our support here at Red Eye Radio, and we greatly appreciate all the sacrifices you make on the job out there as truck drivers. We want to say hi to Chris in Maryville, Tennessee, and he drives for Keenan Transport. And Derek in Jackson, Tennessee, he drives for Ozark Motor Lines. He's been trucking for over 16 years. So, Chris and Derek, thank you for being out there. I want to say thank you to our sponsors for making all this possible. Shell Rotella, Denny's, Pilot Flying J, Mercer Transportation, Motel 6, House Products, and the St. Christopher Truckers Relief Fund. Thank you, drivers.
Thank you.
Yes.
As always.
Yes.
Yep.
It's looking at fuel prices. Diesel price is still at on the national average at $5 a gallon. But when you break it down into regions, it gets crazy very quickly.
Well, you know, this is something that we had talked about, that the price of diesel wasn't going to come down like the price of gasoline. So
right.
Anything that's being transported is still going to be, because of the shipping cost, is still going to be quite high. And that will help keep, as we saw with the inflation for food, up 1.1% last month. That was conveniently ignored. Oh,
yeah.
I did see that later on in the day zero inflation became, the president apparently was walking by reporters and said, zero inflation means some prices went up and some prices came down by the same amount. No, that's not zero inflation.
No.
Picking and choosing, but well, this particular item and this, therefore that's zero inflation.
No.
Inflation was 8.5%.
Yeah.
And it's 8.5% based on the increased inflation from June of last year of 2021 to July. The base rate for the 8.5% is higher than the base rate for 9.1% the month before. And higher for 8.3% inflation the month before, it's higher than that base because inflation was increasing last year, where we were up to about, what, 5? We looked at it last week. Was it 5% at this point, 5.6% inflation last year at this time, I think it was?
I think it was somewhere around there.
Yeah, I think it was 5. Hang on one second. I have to know. In inflation for August of 2021 was, and I think it was, I think we looked at it last week, 5.3%.
Okay,
is what it was for August of last year.
All right.
So it's on top of that base, and it was lower in July. So it's 8.5% of what it was the year before. So the percent can go down, but the actual impact to the consumer and the prices from what you saw 12 months ago to 13 months ago would still be higher. That percentage is not a cost of the actual goods or service that you are buying and what the increase is.
You're gaining weight every year, and you're looking at it on the scale as month over month over last year, and you're, you know, in July, you didn't gain as much weight as you did, you know, the previous month over the year before, but you're still fat. That's, you know, this is this insanity of.
I'm going to use that with my doctor next time.
Yeah, I mean, it's
well, the percentages.
It's like saying you're losing weight. For them to say, well, inflation's coming down. No. Technically, the rate of inflation
is coming. Right. So it's like going, it's like going to the doctor. You were 150 pounds.
Yeah.
Then you went to the doctor 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And you went up to 180.
Yeah.
And then this 6 months you went and you were only 200.
Yeah.
And you tell them, yeah, but the rate of my
I gained 0 pounds.
The rate of my protoplasm growth is less than it was. But it's still getting worse.
Yeah, right. And that's what I'm going to tell my doctor. Zero. I have a number for you, doc.
Zero.
No, I'm you added another zero to your weight. That's what my doctor would tell me.
I don't identify.
Yeah. You know, don't make me call Maury Povich to cut a wall out. This is, you know, but that's the entire approach here. It's like they're, you know, hey, look, you're losing weight. No. No, you're fat. And you're getting fatter. And you know, that's the insanity.
You know what it's actually like? It's like, is, you know, did you ever see, for people that get, you know, they get older and they get heavier, they get the double chin.
Mm.
And I don't even know what it works, but my father was telling me about it one time. They had that thing, the exercise thing that you put. It's like you put it at your chin and you go up and down with your head, and it's supposed to take.
Spring-loaded thing, yeah.
Spring-loaded thing, and it's supposed to take. Mm-hmm. You know, and so you can sit there and say, well, look, see, I've lost weight in my chin.
Yeah, right. No, my index finger is looking really slim.
My hands are skinnier than they were the month before, even though overall you're heavier.
And I'll tell you, the reason my index finger and my thumb look slimmer is because that's primarily what I use to eat the Cheetos. insanity.
It's bizarre,
trying to say, well, no, I am losing weight. No, well, no, you're not. You're just not gaining at the same pace. You're still gaining weight, and this is what's going on with families, because when they see this kind of insanity and they're like, really dude, because I remember July and I remember my grocery bill and it wasn't zero.
And I think that's why the president had to come out, that when he said that, the blowback was so great.
Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, by zero is some prices went down the same as some went up.
You know what he's trying to do? He was trying to say net zero, and that doesn't even work. Well, net zero is not zero, Mr. President. Oh, we finally got to use that in a meaningful way.
Can we combine climate change and inflation together?
Yeah. Exactly. Net zero is not zero, Mr. President. Man, I love that. But this is, you know, the harsh reality is being felt by the consumer every single day. And that kind of arrogance, again, the better play is to not say the word inflation ever again. Not say it. Don't say inflation ever again.
Okay, let's redefine the word. We come up with a new word.
Well, actually, don't even bring up the topic of inflation. That talk about, oh, look, the stock market is up today. That's a good sign. We hope everybody is doing well. And by the way, Janet Yellen's going to come after you.
The more valued product index percentage is getting better.
Yeah.
Because everything's worth more. And, you know, technically, it's not really
the value isn't more. It just costs more.
Well,
requires more of those dollars to.
Yeah, but I gotta figure out a way to say something that makes it seem like it's more valued.
Well, no, that's what they tried to do. Remember, well, people are spending a lot more money. The economy is strong.
Yeah.
No. You don't get it. They're spending a lot more money and getting less stuff.
Remember? Do you remember that was last October, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think that was last October or November. No, inflation is good.
Right.
It means people are spending more money.
Right.
We can't forget came out
they
of
used
the,
it.
The White House last
right.
year.
They're spending. And look, everything's great. The economy is great. They're still, in a couple of instances, they're trying to make this. No, the economy is good. Everything's fine. It's good. It's all. And one of the things they do is that, you know, you look at the stock market. And the stock market, and sometimes we'll look at it and say, okay, why is the stock market going up or down? And you can see that, but if there's a trend, is the question. Is there a trend? You know, if we have a losing streak, you know, if you get into, a bear market and it, you know, looks like it's really going to be a long-term bear market, you can go, all right, here's what's going on. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at real economic indicators, you know, the market yesterday, seemingly, and there are other way too many other factors in play, but at least on that report of it being better than expected, what does that tell you? Inflation comes out for July at 8.5. It wasn't 8.7. Woohoo! Well, it tells you that that's how bad it is. Because what happened last time? You and I were in here hours before the report. We were heading out the door hours before, and I said, what if it's above 9? And it was. It was 9.1.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the problem is the median forecast was, you know, a few points lower than that. And it's like, okay, this is the issue is that, okay, it's worse than we thought it was going to be. Well, it came in better, and it's like, oh, man, a breath of air. And anyone who is drowning comes above the surface,
well,
and that first breath of air is always the sweetest.
Well, here's the thing: because those are forecasts are an abstract concept, you know. So you use that and you say what you say is, well, the actual inflation was below the number that 50 economists who are wrong 50% of the time have projected.
Yeah, right.
I'm serious.
No, because the median forecast means half of them predict it's going to be above that, half predict it will be lower than that.
And they're always wrong, all economists, almost half the time.
Well, yeah, the fact
forecast. Well, let's put it this way. The vast majority of the economists on inflation, you probably had 90% of them were wrong on where inflation was going.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually being generous in doing the 50%. But that's the kind of society we live in today. The experts that are wrong half the time, we decided to figure out whether the public mood is going to be good or bad based on whether the reality fit their abstract projections that they're wrong 50% of the time on. Oh, no, I feel good because it's better than the people that get it wrong half of the time have said.
Yeah.
And I could use that in a stand-up comedy routine. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
If I was doing stand-up comedy, and I have no intention of doing it,
right.
And if my stand-up comedy was about getting into Keynesian versus free market economics, which probably wouldn't be funny for the most of the audience.
Yeah. If I was going to build a home from scratch, I'd use that hammer. I actually think of those things too. It's like, oh man, that's a good line. That's a good bit. Like, yeah, okay, okay. I'm not going to do that. Been through that. That's trying to. You want me to do 10 minutes? Yeah, no. Try and shut me up after 10 minutes. That would be the problem. I'm not saying it's going to be funny. I'm just saying I'll have a problem shutting up.
Wow. All right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. And then the video yesterday of Hunter Biden walking up the airplane steps with his father, you know, after the, you know, after more of the emails coming out saying that, you know, earlier this week that, you know, Joe Biden in the White House met with members of the energy company with ties to the Chinese Communist Party back in 2014.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a bunch of stories written about, you know, all this stuff going on that Biden knew, and then the airplane. And so there he's walking up in the airplane to go on vacation with Biden. And I'm like, he's just trolling.
You know,
he's just trolling.
He's trolling Trump hard because what he's doing here, this is such an Izzy Mandelbaum move where he's basically saying, how dare you call Zelensky and tell him to go after my son. I'll send the FBI into your home, pal. And then my son and I will get on a plane together in front of the media out in the open. By the way, they're vacationing in China. So.
Well, the people of South Carolina might object to that statement.
Okay, fine. That's where their layover is.
But I really think that it's like, look, when he goes on vacation, doesn't matter, people are happy. Then I'm not kidding. I think that they're saying,
right,
let's keep him away from the White House. Let's keep him away from the microphone. Don't answer any questions. No press conferences. Just put him on a permanent vacation. And people are like, oh, sort of like in Canadian Bacon.
Yeah.
The president in Canadian Bacon, Alan Alda. Well, they thought you were dead, sir, but your polling numbers when they thought you were dead went up 20 points.
When he's on vacation, his points may continue to rise. Who knows, right?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. And if you can't listen because you're busy, your work schedule changes or something like that, or you wish to tell your friends that may be sleeping at this time that they should listen to the show and you can give them a sample of us, then you
should
do that.
If you really cared about them, you would call them right now and wake them up.
That's true. So did you hear what they said?
You need to wake up. You're missing this.
Well, for six and a half years.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's lawyers have been trying to get him to shut up. And finally yesterday, after having to be persuaded, let me get the word that his attorney used, substantively, he had to be persuaded not to answer any questions from the Attorney General of New York. As a quote from his lawyer, that he wanted to testify, and they finally got him at the last moment not to do it. Just take the fifth. Now, as Andrew McCarthy pointed out, I think, that civil court isn't the same because these are civil charges.
Hmm.
These aren't criminal charges.
Yeah, anything that comes of this would likely end up in a, if anything came of this, it would end up in some kind of settlement or payment charge,
right,
basically.
But anything he says in a civil court can be used against him in a criminal court.
Yep.
And so not only that, but when it came to the criminal courts don't look at the fifth the same as civil courts do. The judge in a criminal court will specifically tell you, you cannot take any inference from him taking the fifth. They don't say that in civil courts.
Right. No, it's a much wider burden in a civil court in trying to make a case.
And so but they said he wanted to testify. They asked him over 400 questions. I mean, they asked him about his golf clubs and everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Look, I said this. If what happened to him, especially after Russia collusion, what you see of the January 6th committee not being fair, and I don't like this. I do not, in the United States, I do not like the system where politicians that have partisanship can almost be and present evidence to a Department of Justice in criminal referrals that are not based on any type of fairness or any type of mindset of cross-examination to be fair to your target. And that's what's going on here. And it's obvious that it's going, everybody knows it. Now, look, the polling, and it just wasn't the poll the other day, the polling all along. Well, I know it's partisan. Everybody knows it is. When you don't have the minority that can pick their own representatives to be on the panel, it's not fair.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And it doesn't, and that's why you have, you know, whether you have people that dislike and have not voted for Trump, a Dershowitz, a Turley,
mm-hmm,
when they come on, go, this is not American. You can't be doing this. I'm just extremely uncomfortable with the process, what's going on from the January 6th committee. You can see where they obviously keep out evidence. And I don't know if it was Turley or somebody else the other day brought it up. Well, we brought up how many times Liz Cheney has said, here's what Trump said, and leaves out the part where he said peacefully.
Right.
And doesn't include that in there.
Right.
And the point's been made. That doesn't mean you still may be able to make a case against Trump. But when you leave that out, if there was cross-examination of that statement, or you had representatives from the other side that could clearly bring that out, you are then telling a prospective jury, which would be the people of the United States who are listening to this, you know, the political abomination, as I call it, because that's what
mm-hmm,
it is.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you could make them note, see, the prosecution is trying to paint my client in a certain, this person as stating something which would then give you the indication their motivation was to do something, where if you put in the next sentence, it clearly shows that was not the message. And if the prosecution is doing it, it means they believe they have a weak case. You present that to the American people when it happens and you have somebody do it, people would go, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
Because yeah. Americans believe in a system of justice which is fair to the person who is accused of doing something.
Yep.
When you accuse somebody of doing something, most Americans want to say, what's the law? You know, stealing's easy. You took this out of my store.
Mm-hmm.
You walked out. You walked out. We chased you and you ran. You know, that's pretty easy. Stealing. Larceny. Oh, okay, that's pretty easy in the law. You know, here's the evidence. You know, you're guilty. But still, Americans want that person, even if the evidence is clear and you can explain clearly and have the evidence, here, this person is leaving with this. You've got the videotape. You've got them running. You've got everything. Still, the American public demands that that person have representation in the courtroom.
Yep.
And then you have a situation here where they can't identify what the criminal act is. They keep saying the criminal act is there. They keep saying, if you watch tonight, you're going to see it. You never see it. It's obvious the bias, and that there isn't any type of cross-examination. That's brought up a ton of times. And so the American public looks at it and goes, this is not a, it's not a fair process. You're always going to have those people that we know they exist. I hate Trump, so no matter what happens, it's justifiable because I hate Trump.
Well, and that's it. The Attorney General, State Attorney General of New York, she campaigned on going after Trump. And so this is, again, part of the mission by the left, to just go after him with anything and everything. And this has to do with the real estate properties and what he told banks, or how he valued them in one case when he donated the land, and, you know, all of this. And it brings in two of his children. And, you know, this is a, you know, just go after the family approach and go big. And the best thing that could have happened in terms of answering any questions is exactly what happened yesterday. Don't give her the time of day. Nope. And if you got something, present the evidence. Because the fact of the matter is, if there were something there, especially in a civil case, if there were truly something there, then there would have been a move. And we'll see where it plays out. It doesn't mean she's not going to move on something. And it could end up where there's some kind of negotiation and a settlement reached. That happens quite a bit. Because your lawyer costs all of a sudden just skyrocket. And these things can go on for years. I mean, they can just keep doing depositions and just talk about one thing during the entire deposition, one item during the entire deposition. Because she needs it to go on for years. She needs it to go on at least through November of 24. And this is exactly what the left is trying to do, is let's just throw everything at him and make him look like the criminal, like a mobster. Keep in mind, the left adored him before he decided to run for president. And this is it. I think, you know, you're not going to see any different treatment. But what you will see is what you're seeing right now after the raid. You know, we've been saying, well, look, if you're going to do it, you know, go big. Well, they went big. You raid the home of a former president? You think that's not going to help him politically? Record fundraising? And that's only, it's only been a couple of days. There are things he's going to be able to get away with if he decides to run in 24. That there are items that that we would have before the raid said, look, don't bring this up, don't bring that up, don't even talk in those kind of terms, where he will be able to do that, and he will resonate with people. Everything changed. You brought up a really great point in a mid-show meeting that we had earlier off the air, and you said, you know, I want to see the polls after the raid. Everything changed.
Well, I want to see the polls for Liz Cheney.
For Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney in Wyoming.
January 6th. But I extrapolated out, and I took that even further. I said, you make a great point, because now the entire political scope has changed as a result of that raid. And the point being is that not what the wonks or liberal media or even conservative media are saying about this. It's what people in their mind, what the perception is, and the perception is because they've got nothing. The DOJ has still said nothing. Is that they're going after this guy because they don't like this guy. And that's corruption. And so when I say he's going to be able to, if he runs in 24, if this sentiment still remains, then he could campaign and say, look, it's all corrupt. The swamp is bigger than ever. And I want to restore America. I want to restore the integrity of the FBI. I want to restore the integrity of this nation. I want to make America great again. And boom, there you have a rally. And he will reach and connect with people that I think may have been lost before the raid. I think he's going, that message is going to resonate. If the sentiment remains, if the current sentiment remains, not the energy, but the sentiment remains, that the corruption is real, that the swamp is getting bigger. All of these items, I think he's going to be able to go out and he's going to be able to say it, and he will actually be connecting with people as opposed to turning people off. If you're saying it, even after all of the things that happened that were thrown at him, Russian hoax, Mueller, the two bogus impeachments, but raiding his home, the FBI raiding his home, is that proverbial straw. And it's not just a straw. It's a massive, massive, massive pile of not hay, but the stuff you clean up in the hay that I think is going to break that donkey's back. That's going to be it. And politically, it has the potential of really, really coming down hard. Because you have to ask yourself, why isn't the other side saying anything after the raid? Where are they? Where are they defending their actions? Not the liberal media saying, you know, well, he's corrupt and he should be and no one's above the law and blah, blah, blah. No, no. Where's the DOJ? Where's the administration? Where are they defending this? They've been silent. They thought this is going to, I don't know why, but they thought this is going to be a small thing. This is massive, and it won't go away. And the horrible taste it leaves in the mouth, in the mouths of millions of Americans when it comes to corruption, because they know if they're willing to do this to him, they'll go after anybody. And that's a huge problem for the left.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here, as always. We were just into a discussion. Just so you know, this is what increase in energy costs will do. The second largest aluminum mill in the United States has idled operations, laying off about 600 American workers due to untenable electricity and energy prices. In June, Century Aluminum Company executives announced they would idle the Hallsville, Kentucky aluminum mill for about 9 to 12 months as a result of skyrocketing prices to merely keep the plant's lights on. Meanwhile, the executives with two steel mills are suspending operations because they cannot afford the cost of energy to keep the plant's
open. This comes after executives warned federal regulators about debilitating energy prices months ago. Bloomberg reported on June 22nd, 600 workers at the second largest aluminum mill in America, accounting for 20% of U.S. supply, learned that they were losing their jobs because the plant can't afford the electricity that has tripled in a matter of months.
Mm-hmm.
Century Aluminum Company says it will idle its Kentucky mill for as long as a year, taking out the biggest of its three U.S. sites. A shutdown like this can take a month as workers carefully swirl the molten metal into storage so it doesn't solidify in pipes and vessels and turn the entire facility into a useless brick. Restarting takes another 6 to 9 months. For this reason, owners don't hold operations unless they've exhausted all other options. The at least two steel mills have begun suspending some operations to cut energy costs. According to one industry executive who asked not to be identified because the information is in public, in May, a group of factories across the United States Midwest warned the federal energy regulators that some were on the verge of closing for the summer or longer because of what they described as unjust and unreasonable energy costs. They asked to be wholly absolved of some power fees, or requested if granted would be unprecedented.
You know, this is the thing that we've talked about over the years, and that is that manufacturing requires, if you're going to attract manufacturers to the U.S., one of the things that you want to have is cheap and plentiful energy. And we've ensured that we're not going to have that. We have it available to us. We choose not to do it. I don't know how many manufacturers, because if you're looking at this, on the surface here, it's a couple of plants they need to shut down because they can't afford their energy. Well, the problem is deeper than that because we're talking about steel. And that's a problem. So if they're going to shut down steel plants because they can't afford it, what comes next?
Five hours a week on your favorite radio station, online or in our app, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Let's head to Russell in Reno about inflation. Russell, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I love you guys. Love listening to you. I wanted to correct one thing because I'm one of those guys that when I hear the other side, the Democrats, and they come up with crazy statistics or statements or whatever, and they're wrong, it kills me. So when you guys are talking about when Biden said that we have zero inflation, technically he's right because we had zero inflation in July.
No, but no. What he left out, Russell, was a key word. Rate.
What's that?
Of rate of inflation. That's what he left out. He said zero inflation.
No,
and month over month, it increased.
Yeah, no. Month over month, absolutely.
That's not zero.
Or whatever it was.
That's not zero.
Inflation is the rate. No.
Was wrong.
Inflation is the...
Guys, I have to correct you on that. The rate of inflation for the
he didn't say rate. He didn't say rate.
That's what we're saying. He didn't say rate of inflation. Okay. Because here's the thing, Russell, he could have come in and said the rate of inflation decreased. He could have gone that far, but he didn't.
Yeah, it's the rate of inflation.
And
you're stating it month to month, prices went up. That means inflation went up. The rate
increased.
The rate over a year period, the percentage increase in the rate went down.
The rate of inflation dropped.
No, guys, the 12-month average, rolling average, was 8.7 or 8.6, whatever.
8.5.
Only for a small snapshot, I believe, even though he didn't say rate, okay, you guys are right, but I think he was intending to say...
That doesn't matter what he's intending, Russell. It right. doesn't matter what he's intending. He had every chance to correct it, and he had an opportunity, again, to even go further and say the rate of inflation went down and was better than expected, and he didn't say it.
No, even when he was walking, he just said, no, the rate, what I mean by zero is some prices go up, some prices go down. So he didn't even explain the rate.
Yeah,
and
no.
That's the point. Yeah, words matter.
Yeah,
and I know you're saying what he intended. I don't know what, you may know what Biden intends to say.
You may want to carry that in your mind and say, I believe that he wanted to. I can't tell you that.
Right. Because I can justifiably say, but how they've handled inflation the entire time when they pretended it hasn't existed. And that it was transitory, and then it was good, that inflation was good because you were spending more money. We know they're attempting to spin it any way they possibly can.
Right.
And the 0%, the reason it got outrage across the board was the fact that by saying that, whether he said, even if he had said rate, which he didn't say, he said 0% increase. Rate is the key word that we looked at. If he even said rate, there would have been outrage because he's trying to portray that inflation has been defeated.
Again, it's like saying, well, I'm losing weight. Well, no, you're just not gaining weight at the same rate.
Yeah.
That's not losing weight.
Right.
And the problem is that politically you're not going to, if you want to get into the, again, wonkish stuff, if he uses the word rate, you're right, Gary, then great. Technically, he would have been right. Politically, does that resonate? No, because people are still going to the store. But that's not what he did. He didn't say rate of inflation dropped. He didn't say, and he could have been technically accurate and said it was better than expected and the rate of inflation dropped from the previous month.
We are slowing the acceleration
exactly
of inflation.
Yes. We're still on a runaway train, but
it's
not going as fast as it was.
Right. And we all know what the purpose was.
Exactly. If you want to go out of your way and give him every benefit of the doubt, then okay, you can choose to do that. We're not going to do that here. And you finally admitted that we are right.
Well, because of the history of how they have tried to deny inflation was happening.
I can't tell you I can't tell you what was in his mind, what he meant to say. And by the way, when you're on that podium, you're on the world stage, you are the world stage. And you got to get it right. So intentions mean two things. Zero. I'll say this. Intentions actually mean zero. That I can say. That's where zero applies because it means nothing. You have to deliver. You have to be accurate. And he had every chance to correct himself. Is he prone to mistakes? Yeah. You had every opportunity. Every opportunity throughout the day to correct himself. And they didn't do it. Because they wanted to float a number out there. Zero. And here's the thing. They're still debating with the media and the wonks. They're not connecting and not concerned at all with the American families out there that are struggling to make ends meet.
Well, as we said, we had, I don't know if it was a caller or emailer, say, instead of doing that, why isn't he talking about the fact that we've got to get the price of food under control that went up 1.1%?
Right.
Which is annualized, as we said, 13%, which is through the roof.
Right.
And electricity prices up 1.6% in a month, which is 18% year to year. And we've seen electricity prices up 15%. So if you want to get into the we can get into the technical arguments all day. But when it comes down to the argument, are you attempting to solve the problem or just find excuses or cherry pick numbers in order to make it seem like everything is going great? And that's why when we talked about it, we went through all the important numbers out there.
Right.
And we said why the rate went down. The rate went down because of gasoline going down, which brought because it went down so much. But the reason that it went down is because of less demand.
Right.
Demand that was, CNBC wrote, a little bit lower than even the summer of 2020 when we locked down our society.
Right.
So we understand what they're attempting to do. They're attempting to spin the numbers. We're attempting to tell you and put everything into perspective about none of it is good.
Well, that's it. You know, and because you break down the numbers and you look at the core numbers, you look at certain grocery items. You know, that whole basket they talk about when they're putting together inflation numbers, which changed dramatically. But the real basket that counts is the one the consumer is carrying.
Yeah, I would never deny that the rate of inflation went from 9.1% to 8.5%. We know
yeah,
that.
The rate of inflation dropped. Right. And we said it right back when gas prices were dropping. It was probably a week or two after the previous numbers had come out at 9.1%. And we said, okay, if the gas prices continue to drop, then you could see the rate of inflation is going to drop, and they'll probably try and promote that. They didn't even do that. And they could have. Hmm. And it still is bogus, right, because, again, it's implying that prices are coming down, and they are not. Mary Daly, the Fed president, San Francisco Fed president, saying, well, it may mean some relief, but we are far, far from this being a good thing. Let me get the actual quote so I don't misrepresent. There's good news on the month-to-month. President of the San Francisco Fed Reserve, Mary Daly. Quote, there's good news on the month-to-month data that consumers and business are getting some relief, but inflation remains far too high and not near our price stability goal. By the way, some relief. The only relief you could say is lower gas prices, but when people can't afford it, and we're still, because I would argue that with her, when you look at the gas prices year over year, we're still on the national average 83 cents higher per gallon. I haven't checked this morning's numbers yet, but roughly 80-plus cents per gallon higher than a year ago.
Well, and the other thing I would look at when you talk about relief is the what I would call the
$3.99. We're below $4 a gallon.
What I would call the degree of relief. For example,
yes,
gasoline prices have come down, but in 2 weeks ago, which was the last, and we probably should be getting new numbers here soon because they do the 4 week average, I think.
What for what?
For gasoline consumption.
Inventory report.
Right, the inventory report.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the last one we had was from 2 weeks ago, and what they noticed was, because they did the 4 week, and the fourth week, when gasoline prices had come down significantly, they weren't, the supply was, or excuse me, the inventory was still going up.
Mm-hmm.
People still weren't driving.
Right, yeah.
So what is the relief when the core inflation and food inflation is so high that something you use but then decide not to use, that may bring down inflation, but the impact on the population is still incredibly bad, because just because that price comes down, it doesn't mean people are saying, okay, now I can buy that product and use more of that product. That didn't happen because the rest of the inflation, and even outside of core inflation, which is much more broad-based, which is why the economists like Larry Summers is going, there's still a long way to go
mm-hmm.
here on this. And yeah, we're still, the Fed's still going to have to raise it. And when you see food, which is outside of core inflation, but still up 13% year to year, but 1.1%, then you know that the degree of relief, because gasoline prices have come down, is not there for most people
right.
because the driving hasn't gone back up.
Right. Again, we're still 81 cents higher per gallon year over year.
Yeah.
You know, where we
and,
were
and
last
I understand, year. Look, I understand because we always want to be correct, too, and sure. we don't want to be caught in anything. But we looked at it and said, well, he's not saying the rate. He's saying
I was actually waiting,
inflation. Right?
I was actually waiting for them during the day to say, well, no, the president inadvertently left out the word rate. He meant inflation rate.
Right, but we
did
know
not increase,
and that's fine if you want to go over that one word and do that. That's fine with me. But we all know the administration is trying to lie about everything.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's you know that's the problem.
But
is
if you,
that again, even if you talk about the rate coming down from 9.1 to 8.5, you're still talking about a massive cost jump, and the consumer is still feeling it. You're not losing weight. You're still fat.
Well, that's well, that our point exactly was food and electricity.
Yep.
Electricity up to what, Abe? I forgot what electricity was up, but that was I forgot what that was up for the month.
Mm.
But it was up 15% for the year, I believe.
Mm.
Okay, I don't have it here with me at the moment.
And you see these again?
Yes, I do.
These are the household costs that eat over and over again into the budget.
Excluding food and energy prices, core CPI rose 5.9%, 0.3% monthly. I'm looking for the electricity prices because they had that in here, the specific electricity prices. Oh, here it is. Despite the monthly drop in the energy index, electricity prices rose 1.6%.
Month to month?
Month to month. And food was up 1.1%.
And the hits keep coming.
But that's the whole point. With him right. coming out and stating zero, whether he said rate or not, is politically
month
damaging.
To month is still bad.
It's still damaging because electricity prices and food prices, which people have to pay, and it's the summertime.
That's it.
When the bill goes up more for electricity, is killing them.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hardy, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you'd like to get in on the discussion today, I was just reading the IRS job notice
mm-hmm.
that they pulled down because it said carry a firearm and be willing to use deadly force if necessary.
Right.
Be willing to participate in arrests, execution of search warrants, and other dangerous assignments. Just couple of days after the Democrats for weeks have promoted the 87,000 new IRS agents. Well, you got to work 50 hours a week, be on call 24/7, including holidays and weekends.
Who wants to do that job?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Hey, that's part one of our show. Don't miss the rest. Click part two on our website, RedEyeRadioShow.com or Red Eye Radio phone app to hear the rest of the show. And thanks for listening to Red Eye Radio.